Thank you, Bill. It's great to be with you at the Philadelphia Society. I'm actually somewhat in the doghouse, as I was telling Bill beforehand. This is actually my daughter's 9th birthday, but she's having a bunch of 9-year-olds over for a sleepover, so I'm very happy to be here in Dallas. I also have to tip my hat to both Peter and Bill Campbell. This is a wonderful conference, a philosophical issue intertwined with history, touching on contemporary events, just exactly the kind of conversation the Philadelphia Society, it seemed to me, should be having. It's not that conservatives haven't talked about the progressives for some time. I would note one of our great members, Forrest MacDonald, who early on worked over Charles Beard quite well. But there has been a significant scholarly development in the last few decades. All of us on this panel, for instance, are students of Charles Kessler, who really was one of the first to see the deeper implications of progressivism in light of American political thought generally. But this, of course, is part of a larger trend, a rediscovery, if you will, of American political thought. The proper understanding of rights and equality and liberty, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, the whole of the American political tradition over the last 40 years or so. That post-World War II American conservatism spent much of its time searching for a tradition, sometimes economic, sometimes cultural, often looking to figures not in the American political tradition, is, in my opinion, because of the dominance of progressive historians who had essentially hijacked that tradition, claimed it for themselves and its greatest figures for their cause. Many of the scholars here and others have been working to get that story straight. This effort is also part of a larger rediscovery by conservatives of American ideas and a more complete and more American narrative of their own tradition, linking critics of liberalism to early and often overlooked critics of progressivism and the defenders of constitutionalism and the founders themselves. So the debate between the founders and the progressives has been engaged intellectually, politically, and publicly now, I think, as never before. And that debate really turns on the nature of government, the debate over that. Now, we can, of course, trace that concept back to the likes of Thomas Hobbes or Rousseau. And it was Tocqueville, of course, who first pointed out the potential for a form of despotism in a centralized egalitarian state. The American founders understood the need for good administration. It was part of what they called an improved science of politics. But it was the new science of politics that offered the promise of technocracy. The French philosophers and utopians, deeply enamored by the endless promise of reason and modern science, saw the possibility of its ever-growing application to all aspects of the human condition. And it was the late 19th century progressives who took that argument, combined it with the ideas of German idealism and historicism, and Americanized it, seeking to replace constitutional politics with the administrative science of things. Which means that the Americanized version of the modern state was born not in the Declaration of the Constitution, not with the rise of Henry Clay or Abraham Lincoln, but in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, when American progressives decided that the advances of science and history had opened the possibility of a new form of democracy, which they called the administrative state. And so began the most revolutionary change in the last 100 years, the massive shift of power from the institutions of constitutional government to a massive network of unelected, unaccountable experts. The founders' purpose had been to restrict and structure the government to secure the rights of the Declaration. The solution was to create a strong and energetic government of limited powers enumerated in a written constitution, separated into functions and responsibilities and further divided between the nation and the states in a form of federalism, resulting in a great sphere of freedom and self-government. But progressives viewed the Constitution as a dusty old 18th century document. Its basic mechanisms were obsolete and inefficient, designed to stifle change. They believed that just as science and reason had brought technological changes and new methods to the study of the physical world, they also would bring great improvements to the science of politics. For this to be possible, however, government could not be restricted to securing natural rights or exercising unlimited power, limited powers. Instead, it had to be dynamic and constantly changing and evolving, pointed towards achieving the ceaseless objective of progress. So the progressive movement under Republican, then a Democrat, set forth the platform of modern liberalism. They posited a sharp distinction between what they called politics and administration. Politics remained the realm of expressing opinions, but the real decisions and the details of governing would be handled by administrators, separate and immune from the influence of politics. This permanent class of bureaucrats would address the particulars of accomplishing the broad objectives of reform, making decisions, most of them unseen beyond the public eye, on the basis of scientific facts and details and data. They emphasized not the separation of powers, but their combination, which would concentrate its authority and direct its actions. While seeming to advocate more democracy, the progressives of a century ago, like their descendants, wanted the opposite, more centralized control. So it is that today many policy decisions that were previously the work of constitutional elected officers of the legislature are delegated to bureaucrats, whose rules have the full force and effect of laws passed by Congress. In writing legislation, Congress uses very broad language that hands legislative power over to executive departments and agencies, along with the authority to execute those rules and adjudicate their violation. The objective was to transform the American constitutional system from a decentralized self-governing society into a centralized progressive society, focused on national ideals and social justice. Sociological conditions would be changed through government regulation of society and the economy. Socioeconomic problems would be solved by redistributing wealth and benefits. Liberty no longer would be a condition based on human nature and the exercise of God-given rights, but a changing concept whose evolution was guided by government. And since the progressives could not get rid of the old Constitution, they invented the idea of the living Constitution. Given the goal of boundless social programs, government by definition must be itself boundless. It is denied that any limit can be set on government activity, wrote the scholar and later FDR advisor Charles Merriam. The modern idea as to what is the purpose of the state has radically changed since the days of the fathers. The exigencies of modern industrial and urban life have forced the state to intervene at so many points where an immediate individual interest is difficult to show that the old doctrine has been given up for the theory that the state acts for the general welfare. This intellectual construct began to attain expression with targeted legislation under T.R. and Woodrow Wilson. Efforts were augmented by constitutional amendments, the income tax, the direct election of senators, and the trend continued under the New Deal. It was FDR who called for the Second Bill of Rights that would assure us equality in the pursuit of happiness, he said. He held that the primary task of government is to alleviate citizens' want by guaranteeing their economic security. The implications of this redefinition are incalculable, since the list of economic rights is unlimited. But the modern state really took off in the 1960s with Lyndon Johnson's Great Society. By creating a truly national bureaucracy of open-ended social programs in housing, education, the environment, urban renewal, which, like the war on poverty, all failed. The Great Society and its progeny affected the greatest expansion of government in American history. But they had taken the original progressive argument one step further by asserting that the purpose of government was no longer to secure these rights, as it says in the Declaration of Independence, but to fulfill these rights. That was Johnson's title of his 1965 Howard University commencement address, which he talked about the shift from equality of opportunity to guaranteeing an equality of outcome. And so now progressive reformism is back. Huge increases in government spending, regulations, programs, and as the national government becomes more centralized and bureaucratic, it also becomes less democratic, more despotic. The Tangled Law intended to reform healthcare is a perfect example. It would regulate a significant segment of society that has been in the progressives' crosshairs, I guess we can't say that anymore, I'm sorry, for over 100 years. The first nationalized healthcare legislation I've been able to find was in 1904, modeled on German social insurance. It was in the Progressive Party platform of 1912, came back under FDR, Truman, Johnson, Carter, Clinton, and now Obama. The current debate has focused mostly on the constitutionality of the individual mandate. The claim that inactivity is commerce, and so may be regulated by government. But the real problem is a massive delegation of power to 100 or so agencies, bureaus, and commissions, mostly under HHS. It's quintessential progressive methodology. CRS has identified 43 discrete areas where the law requires the executive branch to issue new rules. Just in the last month or so, it's been discovered that the law also front-loads money, about $100 billion, out as far as 2019. And so far, the administration has given out over 1,000 waivers to the law. This is not the rule by rule of law or by consent, it seems to me, but by dictate and whim. This idea of a light administration is not merely an aspect of modern life, an extension of the founders' recognition of the need for good administration, or a necessary adaptation of the existing structure. It's a new and all-encompassing form of political organization, a new regime. It represents, as Max Weber and others have argued, the complete rationalization of politics. The left has long maintained that the administrative state is inevitable, permanent and ever-expanding, the final form of democratic government. The rise of progressive liberalism, they say, has finally gotten us over our love affair with the founding. The New Deal and the fruits of centralized authority brought most Democrats over to the argument, and many Republicans came to accept the progressive arguments as well. Seeing responsible stewardship of the modern state and incremental reforms around the edges as the only viable option, these Republicans tried to make government more efficient, more frugal, more compassionate, but never questioned its direction. As a result, politics came to be seen as the ebb and flow of periods of progress and change on the one hand, and brief interregnums to defend and consolidate the status quo. Other than a few aberrations like Ronald Reagan and a few unruly conservatives, present company included, there seemed to be no real challenge to the liberal project itself. The left, all they thought they had to do was wait for the next great era of reform, and along came Barack Obama. But a funny thing happened on the road to the next revolution. The left's overreading of the 2008 elections gave rise to a vast overreaching agenda that is deeply unpopular. Santelli's rant, the Tea Parties, the elections of 2010. The largest shift in Congress against a sitting president since 1938. The largest shift at the state level since the 1920s. This, it seems to me, creates a great opening and opportunity for conservatism. Growing opposition to runaway spending and debt and to a looming government takeover of health care doesn't necessarily mean the voters want to get rid of Social Security or close down the Department of Education, but it may mean they are ready to embrace clear, enforceable limits on government. The opportunity and the challenge for those of us who seek to conserve America's liberating principles is to turn the healthy public sentiment of the moment, which stands against a political agenda to revive an activist state, into a settled and enduring political opinion about the nature and purpose of constitutional government. Is it possible to bring politics and government back into harmony with the principles of the Declaration and the forms of the Constitution? It seems to me that the progressive transformation is incomplete, and the form of the modern state not yet settled, at least not by the American people. Add to that, the current model of government is unsustainable. The new one has not yet been defined, hence the great instability in our politics. The solution to the problem, however, will not come from the left, but from the right. A conservatism robustly grounded on American political ideas, the principles of the Declaration and the Constitution, not only strengthens conservatism and is a better fusion of its elements, but also takes a high ground from which to challenge the whole progressive project and reassert constitutional republicanism. Thank you.